there is an enormous recognition of the consequences to our economy if we go over the cliff. I think in terms of our federal workers, the idea that we would once again have some dramatic jolt that would result from the sequestration cuts, which are the most inappropriate cuts, the least thoughtful approach, would be horrible. But there is also kind of a sense that most of this negotiating is going on, obviously between the president and the speaker. But I can say, as someone who's been on this issue for 2.5 years, building first the bipartisan Gang of Six, which grew to 45 senators and 100 House members, and recruiting the business community in this new campaign to fix the debt that's raised $40 million to support a bipartisan solution. I think there are large, large numbers, particularly in the Senate, of folks in both parties who want to be part of this debate, part of this discussion, and are willing to support a balanced approach that both raises more revenues and recognizes our entitlement programs have got to be made viable over the long term.
I guess the devil's in the details, but the issue seems to be slowing down on the whole issue of tax rates versus changing in the tax code, which would give more revenue. And I mean, I'll just ask you, do you think the Democratic side is just being like a dog with a stuffed toy that won't let go of the tax rate issue?
Well, I think, you know, you need not only the revenues from folks like me and those of us who've been very successful, but you also have to decide, you know, the rates question is not just a rates question. It's also a question of, if you're going to do tax reform and you want to maintain the progressivity of the tax code, which I strongly support, you know, what do you base it against? Do you base it against the 39% with those revenues in the revenue stream, or off a much lower basis on the 35%? And remember, these rate issue is not only rates, but it also it involves capital gains, dividends, and the estate tax. And in total, you take those items that have all gone on to the what we use in shorthand, the extension of the Bush tax cuts, over 10 years, that generates $1 trillion. So that's a $1 trillion swing about where you start this discussion. And it's one of the reasons why I think the Democrats do need to make clear that that revenue is going to be in the, a final package. And, you know, I know the president has talked about maybe there are other ways, but the notion that you can get it simply through tax reform when you actually put pencil to paper makes it much, much harder. So, you know, I think there may be a way to start with the rates higher and then, you know, reform down from those. But these are the details where listeners and the public eyes glaze over, but the actual effect is quite dramatic on trying to get a balanced solution.
And that brings us, I mean, we hear a lot about bipartisan rancor, but you're working with this Gang of Six, or maybe gang of eight now.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about what you guys are actually doing and where you have common ground.
Well, we had a full-fledged $4 trillion plan that we put forward based upon the Simpson-Bowles plan around the question of the debt ceiling. That's still our framework. That includes additional revenues, that includes entitlement reform, that includes additional cuts both on domestic and defense and mandatory programs. The challenge has been that, again, your listening audience would appreciate this more than most, if you change your baselines, it does have dramatic effects. So we've been trying to update that, add some new ideas, and we continue to talk, we continue to meet, we continue to kind of rally outside supporters. But what we don't want to do, at least at this point, is get in any way of ongoing negotiations between the president and the speaker. And we also want to see what happens tomorrow with the meeting of the congressional leadership to see if they would be willing to step forward in a more kind of united way. We also think we can create some value as if, you know, we've got to take the first round of arrows for a few folks. That's fine as well.
Explain that for us for a
second.
Well,
I mean, I remember when we put forward the Gang of Six proposal that some of the groups on the progressive side, the ARP and labor and others, didn't like it because it changed some entitlements. And then it raised additional revenues, and that didn't make the Grover Norquist crowd or some of the others mad. So there was enormous immediate negative reaction. What's been ironic is that many of those folks, particularly on the progressive side, because we had low income protections and we had, you know, substantial amount of revenues, came back afterwards and said, well, maybe that wasn't so bad after all, especially compared to what we've seen in the kind of idea marketplace since. So one of the challenges is particularly in this aftermath of the election is, even if you've got a great plan, it may be hard for both sides to immediately, you know, the leaders on both sides to agree. So if, you know, we have to take the first few whacks and it can narrow the playing field so that the Speaker and the President, where, and again, particularly the President who is taking a leadership role on this, can get us faster and quicker to a yes, that may be some value. But we have to see how this will continue to the leadership discussions play out. Because the value in this, I think one of the things that's also important to realize while we look at the dire consequences if we don't get this fixed, we also have to look at the upside. And the rest of the world's economy is very challenged at this point. Europe is in a recession. China is slowing dramatically. India's got enormous political gridlock as well. We look pretty darn good compared to the rest of the world. And if we can get a real substantive budget deal that will phase in over the next 10 years, that will generate investment capital coming off the sidelines, investing in America. Quite honestly, I think a budget deal will do more for job growth and the spur of this economy than any specific program the President or Governor Romney laid out in their campaign. And it will do an enormous amount of, I think, value in terms of restoring America's confidence, particularly as we go into the very important retail holiday season, that the folks they've hired are actually going to put country ahead of partisan interest.
We're speaking with Virginia Senior Senator Mark Warner. All right, getting down to earth for the federal bureaucracy. There is a continuing resolution right now that goes until March 27th. So at some point, basically the Senate is the one that has to confront the need for a budget bill. There really hasn't been a Senate budget in a while. Do you think there's any chance that for people that plan their lives around what the federal government's own operational budget is, can see something ahead that will get us out of this really long continuing resolution pattern?
Well, first of all, I absolutely hope so. I mean, every time we start and stop the federal government, the largest enterprise in the world, we waste millions and millions of dollars. And nothing is a crazier business proposition than running the federal government on 3, 6, and 9 month continuing resolutions. It's insane because you can't plan. You, if you're a contractor, you don't know, whether those that contract will be there. If you're in the federal government itself, a federal employee, your programs you can't move forward on. So, from a plain efficiency and cost-saving standpoint, we need to get full-year appropriations bills. I know a lot of folks on the defense side, there are going to be additional cuts beyond the roughly $480 billion that have been agreed on already. But doing those in a measured way with a longer lead time, people can manage against that. What they can't manage against is something where you've got three month and 6 month time horizon. So I absolutely hope and pray from a business standpoint and from a cost-saving standpoint that we'll be able to do full-year appropriations bills. And frankly, I would rather the federal government switch to what we used to have in Virginia, which was a two-year appropriation process, and then you could come back each year and do oversight and make budget changes. But let's give even a longer time horizon.